evening, everyone. This is Lou Caravelli, speaking for the Divided Kingdom radio show. Welcome to the program. And you can visit our website at DividedKingdomRadio.com, DividedKingdomRadio.com. And if you want to write to us, make a contribution, ask for our book, or just make a little chat, tell us what you think. You can write to me, Lou, L-O-U, Caravelli, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, at Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And I'll make sure I give that address again a little later in the program if you didn't have a pencil or paper handy. We'll begin with an article that appeared in the People's Voice, May 14th, 2025, by Baxter Dimitri, entitled, German Prosecutors Warn Bill Gates, Prison Awaits as Cancer-Causing DNA Found in COVID Vaccines. German prosecutors are circling. Their message to Bill Gates? Judgment is coming. In recent weeks, a series of leaked documents and whistleblower testimonies have begun to shed light on Gates' role in what many are now calling a global crime against humanity, one that unfolded during the COVID-19 pandemic and may have cost millions of lives. But this didn't start in 2020. For decades, Bill Gates has operated in plain sight, disguising domination as philanthropy. From unauthorized vaccine trials on vulnerable children in Africa and India, to experimental population programs disguised as humanitarian aid, he's pursued a vision rooted not in healing, but in control, in eugenics, in quiet depopulation. So, how has he escaped scrutiny for so long? Because he bought silence. He funds the very health organizations tasked with oversight. He bankrolls major news outlets to keep his name clean. And he's embedded himself in the world's most powerful circles, from the World Health Organization to the World Economic Forum, where global agendas are decided behind closed doors. But the cracks are widening. Whistleblowers are breaking their silence. Legal teams across Europe, Africa, and the Americas are building their cases. And behind the scenes, Gates is said to be spiraling, erratic, cornered, and afraid. Because the evidence is mounting, the lies are crumbling, and for the first time in decades, the world is asking the one question Gates thought he'd never have to answer: what if the savior, in quotes, was actually the executioner? Everywhere he goes, Bill Gates is met with passionate protests demanding his arrest for crimes against humanity. He's a wanted man in the United States. He's a wanted man in Canada. And he's a wanted man in London, England. But Gates isn't backing down. In fact, according to insiders, he's doubling down, accelerating what many are now calling his genocidal agenda. In a sudden and unpublicized global tour, Gates has been touching down in some of the world's most populous nations, applying quiet but overwhelming pressure on governments to adopt the most extreme version yet of his genocidal agenda. Behind closed doors, sources say he's pushing for digital ID systems, biometric tracking, centralized vaccine enforcement, and sweeping emergency powers that override national sovereignty. Just days after a closed-door meeting between Bill Gates and the WHO's Tedros Ghebreyesus and Singapore's new Prime Minister, Lawrence Wong, the city-state passed dystopian legislation. Mandatory vaccination is now law, and refusal is officially a criminal offense, punishable by huge fines and serious prison time. Barely 2 days later, Gates surfaced in Indonesia, where eyewitnesses say he was pressuring the president to greenlight a disturbing new clinical trial, one that would see Indonesian children used as test subjects for a Gates Foundation-backed mRNA tuberculosis vaccine, touted as, quote, for the world, unquote. This isn't philanthropy, it's coercion. And it's happening right now, in quiet rooms, on vulnerable soil, and with devastating consequences for bodily autonomy, national sovereignty, and basic human rights. Why is Bill Gates doubling down, pushing harder than ever before? Because he's running out of time, and everywhere he turns, the legal net is tightening. In a stunning legal blow, Gates has lost his, quote, special privileges and immunity, unquote, status in Kenya, following a landmark ruling by the nation's high court. This decision has thrown his operations in the country into chaos, intensifying the mounting legal challenges against him. Kenya, a key site for Gates' controversial vaccine trials, has now become a battleground, with lawsuits from victims of his experimental programs piling up, each one accusing him of reckless endangerment and medical malpractice. Meanwhile, in India, the Gates Foundation was kicked out after an explosive investigation revealed the shocking number of children maimed, sterilized, or killed in his experimental vaccine trials. And in the Netherlands, the public has had enough. Citizens are rising up, taking their fight to the courts, demanding justice for the damage done by Gates' fraudulent mRNA vaccines, administered under the guise of the so-called Great Reset. The walls are closing in, and Gates is running scared. It's getting worse for Bill Gates, much worse. Now he's facing legal jeopardy in Germany, as prosecutors prepare to file charges against him for his role in the disastrous rollout of the COVID vaccines. The spotlight is on a groundbreaking study that has exposed startling new evidence about the dangers of these vaccines. Led by independent researcher Jürgen O. Kirchner from Hamburg and Professor Brigitte Koenig of the University of Leipzig, the study has sent shockwaves through the scientific community. Published in the Preprints Journal, this research digs deeper into the issue of DNA contamination in Pfizer's mRNA vaccines, something that's been hinted at before, but never fully confirmed. Using cutting-edge qubit, I guess that would be pronounced, Q-U-B-I-T, fluorescence spectroscopy, Kirchner and Koenig found that the levels of residual DNA in multiple batches of Pfizer's vaccine are not just present, they far exceed regulatory safety thresholds, potentially by orders of magnitude. This isn't just an oversight. This is a catastrophic failure of safety protocols, and it puts millions at risk. And Bill Gates? He's at the center of it all. Prosecutors are starting to take action, and it's no surprise. German government data just revealed what we've suspected all along. There was no pandemic. That's right. The German government has been forced to admit that the so-called conspiracy theorists were right about everything. The pandemic wasn't a natural health crisis. It was a meticulously orchestrated, military-grade psyop designed to manipulate and brainwash the masses into accepting an experimental vaccine pushed by the likes of Bill Gates with devastating consequences. I'm going to skip down a little bit now. It says the secret documents, all 2,000 pages of them, revealed that we were right about nearly everything, and the so-called pandemic was all fraud. These facts are damning and prove the official narrative about COVID, pushed by world governments, Bill Gates, and mainstream media, was completely bogus. The data also reveals that Sweden, which was the only European country free of masks and lockdowns, performed much better than Germany and other nations that followed Bill Gates' orders, which raises the question, what were the tyrannical lockdowns and mandates really about? Professor Homburg has the answer, and as it turns out, we were right all along. The charges against Gates and the cabal could not be more serious. The Germans understand that they are dealing with a criminal operation that intentionally poisoned the bloodstream of humanity with a view to reducing the global population. Gates cannot be allowed to keep getting away with his crimes. The COVID pandemic was the tripping point. If we, the people, let him gain more power through the Great Reset, we can be sure he will do even worse in the future. and I'll cut it off there. That gives the main points. If you want to read the whole article, it was from the People's Voice. That's thepeoplesvoice.tv, May 14th, 2025. And the short form of the title was German Prosecutors Warn Bill Gates, Prison Awaits. Well, now, a whole different topic, a little human interest kind of story. Many of us have read or heard about the original attempt to found a colony by England in the New World, or at least in North America, at Roanoke Island, which is now in North Carolina. So here we have from GB, I think that's probably short for Great Britain, but anyway, gbnews.com, I believe it is. Archaeology breakthrough as mystery of America's lost colony finally, quote, solved, unquote, with 400-year-old secret revealed by Ed Griffiths. And this was May 13th, 2025. Archaeologists could have finally solved the 435-year mystery of America's first English settlement known as the Lost Colony of Roanoke. Tiny flakes of rusted metal, called hammer scales, have provided crucial evidence about what happened to the 118 colonists who disappeared in the late 1500s. The metal fragments, barely larger than grains of rice, are byproducts of metal forging and date back to the 16th century. The mystery began in 1587 when Governor John White led the colonists to establish England's first outpost in North America on Roanoke Island in present-day North Carolina. White soon departed for England to gather supplies, leaving the settlers behind. And I'll just interject, there were a number of reasons that White could not return as he wanted to, and that was delayed. Now, he established this attempted colony in 1587, and getting back to the article now, when he finally returned in 1590, so that would be 3 years later, he found an abandoned settlement with the word Croatoan, C-R-O-A-T-O-A-N, carved into a wooden post. This suggested the colonists had relocated to join friendly Croatoan natives on what is now Hatteras Island, North Carolina, 50 miles south. For more than a decade, archaeologists Mark Horton and Scott Dawson have been excavating around Buxton on Hatteras Island. In April, they identified large quantities of hammer scales in the soil, dating to the same century. This metalworking technology was familiar to English settlers, but unknown to the Native Americans. The evidence suggests the colonists joined the Croatoans and were absorbed into their community. The findings have been displayed at Dawson's Lost Colony Museum in Buxton. The archaeologists also discovered weapons, a metal Tudor rose emblem, and a European token, further supporting their conclusion. Historical theories had suggested various fates for the colonists, including massacre by hostile tribes, capture, inland relocation, or death from disease. Some had believed that they had been attacked by the Spanish or perished at sea while attempting to return to England. So, there's some good evidence there. I wouldn't go so far as to say that the whole mystery is solved, but it does seem as if they're heading in the right direction. All right, now back to a more political item. This is from LifeSite News, and that, by the way, was from GB, as in Great Britain News, GB News, May 13th, 2025, archaeology breakthrough as mystery of America's lost colony finally solved. And solved in quotations, because that's up for debate. And now the next one, LifeSite News. Former FBI Director James Comey posts image appearing to call for Trump's assassination. And this is by Doug Mainwaring, again from LifeSite News, Friday, May 16th, 2025. Dateline, Washington. Americans were shocked to see a social media post by former FBI Director James Comey calling in not-so-thinly-veiled coded terms for the murder of President Donald J. Trump. President Trump's son, Donald Trump Jr., posted a picture of Comey's offensive post and said, quote, just James Comey casually calling for my dad to be murdered, unquote. And the president's son went on, this is who the Dem media worships, demented, unquote. Comey posted a picture of shells forming the numbers 86-47, captioning it, quote, cool shell formation on my beach walk, unquote. People viewing the post knew instantly the meaning of the message that Comey was broadcasting. 86 is well known within law enforcement circles as a code for kill or murder. And 47 is a reference to President Trump, the nation's 47th president. Comey deleted the post and offered a less than credible explanation, claiming that he, quote, didn't realize some folks associate those numbers with violence, unquote. Members of the Trump administration's Department of Justice and law enforcement agencies, as well as members of Congress, were quick to condemn Comey's action. Senator Mike Lee expressed shock and dismay over Comey's post, saying the, quote, cryptic message, as far as I can tell, can be read only to mean kill Trump. And Lee continued, as far as I can tell, this was his post. He hasn't disavowed it, and it means exactly what it appears to mean, unquote. And Lee wrote that on a long X thread. Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, said that Comey's explanation, absolving himself of ill intent toward the president, was, quote, a ridiculous and insane statement to make, certainly within this context, but especially coming from a guy who's the former director of the FBI, a guy who spent most of his career prosecuting mobsters and gangsters, people who know and execute other humans and use this exact lingo of 86. And Tulsi Gabbard went on, the dangerousness of this cannot be underestimated. Gabbard told Fox News' Jesse Waters in an interview. And she also said, James Comey, in my view, should be held accountable and put behind bars for this. And Kristi Noem, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, stated, disgraced former FBI Director James Comey just called for the assassination of President Trump. DHS and Secret Service are investigating this threat and will respond appropriately, unquote. And current FBI Director Kash Patel noted, quote, we are aware of the recent social media post by former FBI Director James Comey, directed at President Trump. We are in communication with the Secret Service and Director Curran. Primary jurisdiction is with the Secret Service in these matters, and we, the FBI, will provide all necessary support, unquote. And General Mike Flynn, a close confidant of President Trump, who himself experienced Comey's underhanded tactics in the early days of Trump's first administration, General Flynn said, quote, this isn't a game the deep state is playing. They're in it to get total control over our lives, to destroy everything good and decent in our country, and to act as though we're too stupid to realize what they're up to. And he declared, this is General Flynn declared, using all capital letters, deep state, we the people got your number, and we're done with your nonsense. And Flynn added, I've said many times, arrogance will be your downfall, and that is exactly what is happening. May God have mercy on your souls. Fox Business anchor Maria Bartiromo took Comey to task on X, quote, you know you broke the FBI with your politics and hate. You should be ashamed of yourself, James Comey, and we are all waiting for accountability for your sick weaponizing of the most important law enforcement agency. She continues, everyone knows what you did. President Trump was restrained in his response to Comey. In an interview with Fox News' Brett Baer, Trump said of Comey's 86-47 post, quote, he knew exactly what that meant. A child knows what that meant. You're the FBI director and you don't know what that meant? That meant assassination. It says it loud and clear, said President Trump, who indicated that he would leave the handling of the situation to law enforcement and intelligence agencies. In Gabbard's interview with Waters, she explained the treasonous, toxic nature of Comey's action calling for a hit on President Trump. And these were her words. When we have two assassination attempts in the president's life, when we have people who look to guys like Comey, who have been celebrated by MSNBC and the Democrat elite, and CNN as the beacon of integrity, the law and order guy, the guy who would tell the truth no matter what the consequences, this is the guy who's issuing a hit on President Trump, the president that the American people voted for. And she went on, so it's guys like Comey and others who call the president the modern-day Nazi, people who are in great positions of influence, who are saying that President Trump poses an existential threat to our country. These are people who hate democracy and hate the American people because they cannot stand that the people overwhelmingly chose to elect Donald Trump and send him back to the White House. So they are seeking other means to get their way and to try to remove him from that position. And again, that was Tulsi Gabbard speaking. And the article concludes, there has to be accountability for this. And again, that was from LifeSite News. The date was Friday, May 16th, 2025. And the headline read, former FBI Director James Comey posts image appearing to call for Trump's assassination. All right, now, something that could hit pretty close to home, from The People's Voice by Sean Adel Tabatabai, May 14th, Chinese solar panels found to contain malicious code that can cause blackouts. Chinese solar panels have been found to contain, quote, malicious code, unquote, that can cause blackouts, raising alarms about the risk to energy infrastructure. Over the past 9 months, undocumented, quote, rogue communication devices, unquote, were discovered in inverters and batteries from Chinese suppliers capable of damaging the power grid and triggering widespread outages. U.S. experts, after disassembling the equipment to check for security issues, uncovered these hidden devices, prompting an urgent reassessment of the dangers posed by Chinese-made solar technology. This revelation, reported by Reuters, underscores the growing concern about the stability of renewable energy systems and the potential for malicious interference. DCNF reports, quote, we know that China believes there is value in placing at least some elements of our core infrastructure at risk of destruction or disruption. Those are the words of Mike Rogers, a former director of the U.S. National Security Agency, talking to Reuters. He went on, I think that the Chinese are in part hoping that the widespread use of inverters limits the options that the West has to deal with the security issue. The communication devices were reportedly found in power inverters, which are used to connect solar panels and wind turbines to the power grid, and are often produced in China. They are also found in electric vehicle chargers, batteries, and heat pumps. Undocumented cellular radios were also found in Chinese manufactured batteries, according to the publication. If the rogue communication devices found in the inverters are used to circumnavigate firewalls and change the settings or turn off inverters remotely, this could destabilize power grids, damage energy technology, and prompt blackouts, according to experts who spoke with Reuters. One of the sources told the publication, quote, that effectively means there is a built-in way to physically destroy the grid. Unquote. For years, energy and security experts have cautioned that reliance on Chinese products for green energy could expose the U.S. to espionage and security risks. A spokesman for the Department of Energy, DOE, told Reuters that it continually evaluates risks involving new technology and that, quote, while the functionality may not have malicious intent, it is critical for those procuring to have a full understanding of the capabilities of the product received. I'm going to jump down now And we have Republican officials sent a letter advising an American energy company to stop using Chinese manufactured batteries due to the security risks in December 2023. According to a February 2024 statement, quote, we approached Duke Energy regarding its use of Chinese manufactured CATL batteries and network equipped systems, which posed an unacceptable surveillance risk at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, the largest marine base in the United States. Directly following our inquiry, Duke disconnected the Chinese manufactured systems from the grid. Those are the words of former Republican Wisconsin Representative Mike Gallagher and Secretary of State Marco Rubio, a U.S. Senator for the state of Florida at that time, in their press release. They also said others that continue to work with CATL and other companies under the control of the Chinese Communist Party should take note. And it sums it up by saying the DOE, the Department of Homeland Security, the National Security Agency, the White House, and the Chinese Embassy did not respond to the Daily Caller News Foundation's request for confirmation or comment. That was, again, from the People's Voice, May 14th, Chinese solar panels found to contain malicious code. And now, the stories about former President Biden are finally coming out after much delay, after all the leading Democrats were saying how good he was, how capable he was, how he was just running the country just fine. Here's an article from Axios, A-X-I-O-S, by Mark Caputo and Alex Thompson, that says, exclusive, prosecutor's audio shows Biden's memory lapses. This was May 16th, 2025. Amid long, uncomfortable pauses, Joe Biden struggled to recall when his son died, when he left office as vice president, what year Donald Trump was elected, or why he had classified documents he shouldn't have had. According to audio, Axios obtained of his October 2023 interviews with special counsel Robert Hur. Why it matters. The newly released recordings of Biden have trouble recalling such details, while occasionally slurring words and muttering, shed light on why his White House refused to release the recordings last year, as questions mounted about his mental acuity. The audio also appears to validate Hur's assertion that jurors in a trial likely would have viewed Biden as, quote, a sympathetic, well-meaning, elderly man with a poor memory, unquote. Partly based on that determination, Hur decided not to prosecute Biden for improper possession of classified documents, angering Republicans because Trump was facing charges in his own classified document scandal then. Democrats in Biden's White House blasted her for his observations about Biden. They repeatedly insisted that he was, quote, sharp, unquote, and that her was politically motivated. But the audio from the five-plus hours of interviews indicates that he and co-counsel Mark Crickbaum were respectful and friendly. The big picture. The audio surfaces as Democrats and the national media are grappling with the legacy of Biden's White House and campaign, hiding his decline as he ran for another four-year term at age 81. Democratic leaders have struggled this week to respond to reports about a new book on that topic, Original Sin, by Axios' Alex Thompson and CNN's Jake Tapper, that will be released Tuesday. Now, again, this was dated May 16th. So I believe that will be Tuesday of this week that the book is due to come out. So we'll probably hear a lot more about it. The audio from 2 3-hour sessions on October 8th and 9th, 2023, adds voice and dimension to the transcripts of the interviews that the Justice Department made available in the weeks after Hur's report was released on February 8th, 2024. Biden's White House refused to release the recordings last year, arguing they were protected, quote, law enforcement materials, unquote. And the Republicans only wanted, quote, to chop them up, distort them, and use them for partisan political purposes, unquote. Between the lines, the audio shows what the transcript lacks. The president's dry whisper voice and the long silences as he struggles to find the right words or dates. These often were supplied by his attorneys, who acted as caretakers for his memory. The attorneys had to remind Biden the year his son Beau died, 2015, and when Trump was first elected, 2016. Also captured on the audio, the tick-tock of a grandfather clock in the White House's map room, where the interviews took place. It adds a metronomic measurement of Biden's halting speech, especially as he describes his book, Promise Me, Dad, about Beau's death from brain cancer at age 46. This is how that part of the interview is recounted in the transcript. Biden says, okay, yeah, in 2017, Beau had passed, and, this is personal, the genesis of the book and the title Promise Me, Dad was a, I know you're all close with your sons and daughters, but Beau was like my right arm, and Hunt was my left, unquote. But here's what it sounded like in the quiet room where the dead air between Biden's pauses is emphasized by the tick-tock of the clock. Okay, yeah, tick. Beau had passed and tick-tock, tick-tock, tick. This is personal. Well, I won't read the whole thing, but you get the idea. It gives you a better sense of the time frame and the hesitation and pauses of Biden. Reading back from the article, Reality Check, while Biden had clear memory lapses and needed assistance at times with words such as fax machine and poster board, overall he was engaged in the interview. He cracked jokes and made humorous asides and was able to respond to the general gist of the questions. But he had little memory of how he came to have classified documents after he left office as vice president. On October 8, the first day of the interview, and the day after Hamas attacks on Israel, Biden often was slow and forgetful of basic facts. That day it took her more than 2 hours to clearly determine how the documents could have ended up in various personal desks and file cabinets after Biden left office. That was because Biden kept veering into other subjects. On October 9th, however, Biden sounded much more engaged and vigorous. Well, there's a little more to that, and if you're interested, let's see. There was a little bit more I wanted to read. Though amiable, the interview became somewhat tense when Biden attorney Bob Bauer chastised prosecutor Crickbaum for leading Biden to consider changing his story about why he kept a classified document about Afghanistan. Bauer instructed the president at one point, "Your answer is that you don't know." In other words, coaching Biden. But then Crickbaum noted that journalists had written about the document, and he asked if Biden intended to keep it because of its historical value. And Biden acknowledged, "I guess I want to hang on to it just for posterity's sake," unquote. That admission of intent technically could have exposed Biden to criminal charges. And Bauer soon interjected, quote, "I just really would like to avoid, for the purpose of a clean record, getting into speculative areas. He does not recall specifically intending to keep this memo after he left the vice presidency." Crickbaum then called for a break. So it would seem that Biden, even back at that time, and again the date of the interview was October 2023, more than a year before the presidential election would be held, and at that point Biden still said he was going to be running for. And for several months afterward, he kept saying that. That, again, was from Axios, May 16th. Exclusive prosecutor's audio shows Biden's memory lapses. And a comment upon that from the Gateway Pundit by Mike LaChance, May 16th, so actually the same day as the other article, independent journalist Mark Halperin mercilessly slammed CNN and Brian Stelter over Biden decline hypocrisy. The journalist Mark Halperin is one of the few people working in media who was honest with the public about Biden's condition. And he was probably the first person to claim Biden was going to drop out of the 2024 race after his disastrous debate performance. During a recent video report, he went after CNN and singled out media reporter Brian Stelter for his dishonesty and hypocrisy in covering the scandal. Stelter deserves this roasting, and so does Jake Tapper, who was also mentioned. If you're not a fan of CNN, you're going to watch this. And this is because it's a video that you can see if you go to that website. I'll repeat that in a few minutes. Red State reports, it was Stelter choosing the fangirl. Now, that's a new word for me, Lou speaking. Fangirl. I never heard that before, but we'll go with it. It was Stelter choosing to fangirl over the book rather than acknowledge the media's politically motivated, grotesque dereliction in coverage of concerns about Biden's health. There was just too much for independent journalist Mark Halperin to tolerate. In commentary from his most recent podcast, Halperin went off, calling Stelter's actions part of a pattern of, quote, journalistic corruption, unquote, in the press. And then you've got at CNN this guy, Brian Stelter, who's a media reporter, who's an ally of Jake Tapper, to protect Tapper's image, to enhance Tapper's image. He's got a media newsletter. He's supposed to cover the media. Guy doesn't write about the biggest failure in the history of American media. Instead, he writes about how great Tapper's book is. Again, Tapper's book is not yet out. And today, in his newsletter, Guy's a fan of irony. They're talking about Stelter there. He writes about how it was so important for Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson to have the book, or to have the truth in that book, the full truth, that they hired the head of the New Yorker fact-checking department to fact-check their book. Okay? Again, the job of a media reporter, I would think, is not to protect and promote his colleague. And this is no innocent here, Brian Stelter. In addition to promoting and protecting Jake Tapper, Brian Stelter has been, over the course of the entire Biden presidency, one of the biggest critics of those on the right and those few people like me in the independent media who have tried to hold Joe Biden accountable. And I believe when it says me, that was Mark Halperin who was doing the talking. And just some comments. I looked up about the book referred to by Jake Tapper, or to be by Jake Tapper, is called Original Sin, President Biden's Decline, Its Cover-Up, and His Disastrous Choice to Run Again. A review in the LA Times by Lee Haber says the book, quote, reads like a Shakespearean drama on steroids, unquote. And during, again, a quote from the newspaper, during his latter years as number 46, that's the 46th president, Biden is portrayed as a lion in winter, shockingly frail and forgetful, with a ferocious pride that blinds him to the fact that it's time to exit the stage. He was assisted in that delusion, the authors claim, by the mythology his family erected around him, that he was an indestructible, and by this zealously protective inner circle dubbed the Politburo. Well, this is Lou speaking now. These people have done a great disservice that I think will go down in history in somewhat the same way as President Woodrow Wilson, when others like Colonel House took over, and also I think Wilson's wife took over, when Wilson had a massive stroke and was really unable to completely carry out the duties of the presidency. So finishing out Wilson's second term, they pretty much ran the show. Illegally, of course, because they were not elected, but they did it anyway. And these people, these members of Biden's own family, including his wife, and all of these high-level supporters of Biden, put their jobs, their prestige, and Biden's glory over and above the good of the country. You shudder to think if there was any threat of nuclear war, what would have happened if Biden was totally unable to make decisions? And it doesn't seem to be the case that he was able to make a lot of decisions, that he just couldn't seem to think straight. Well, enough of that. That, again, was from the Gateway Pundit. Independent journalist Mark Halperin mercilessly slammed CNN and so forth. And that was May 16th, 2025. Now, back to LifeSite news. DeSantis bans fluoride from Florida's water supply. By Stephen Cox, KOKX, Wednesday, May 14th, 2025. And this is Lou speaking now. We talked about fluoride, I think, a couple weeks back, 3 or 4 weeks ago, give or take. And I had said at the time, there was a debate in my own little hometown in Massachusetts when I was a boy about this whole business of fluoride. Now, this is probably when it was pretty new to be put in the water supply. And I think it finally was. I'm not quite sure about that, to tell you the truth. My dentist had been sold the bill of goods, that it was a good thing, that it would prevent tooth decay, bite cavities, and so forth. But there have always been those who thought it was not a good idea to put it in the water supply. So, this is the article. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is touting yet another political victory after he banned local governments from adding fluoride to their public water. DeSantis signed SB 700 earlier this month in Miami. He celebrated the move in an X post, saying, quote, "With wide access to topical fluoride, there's no need to medicate entire communities without their consent. The free state of Florida says no to forced medication, and we're proud to lead the nation on this effort," DeSantis exclaimed. DeSantis' decision was preceded by an announcement made by Florida Surgeon General Dr. Joseph A. Ladapo last November that recommended fluoride be removed from the water supply because of its association with neuropsychiatric disorders and lower IQ in children. Ladapo officially enacted his recommendation after a U.S. District Court ruled in September 2024 that the current U.S. recommendation of 0.7 milligrams per liter water fluoridation, quote, "presents an unreasonable risk of injury to health," unquote. Before DeSantis' signing of the bill, Lee County, Florida commissioners voted 5-0 in February to remove fluoride from its water supply. The compound is touted by the American Dental Association as a beneficial tool in the fight against cavities, despite widespread evidence that it causes other health problems. Radapo congratulated the commissioners in an ex post that heralded the move as being, quote, "backed by science," unquote, and that it will, quote, "improve the health of your communities," unquote. Water fluoridation gained media attention during the 2024 presidential race. After Donald Trump was elected, he told NBC News that Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s proposal to remove fluoride from public water supplies, quote, "sounds okay," unquote, to him, that is to the president. The issue obtained even more attention after a report published by the Department of Health and Human Services last August revealed excessive fluoride consumption in children has been linked to a 2- to 5-point IQ reduction. And this is Lou speaking. When you hear something like that, remember that's an average. That would mean that some children's IQs went down more than that, possibly considerably more. That startling admission prompted Edward Chen, an Obama-appointed federal judge, to order the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to strengthen regulations around fluoride. Data provided by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention from 2020 revealed that roughly 73% of the U.S. population has access to fluoridated water through public water systems, though that number is likely to decrease. Grand Rapids, Michigan was the first city in the U.S. to add fluoride to its water supply back in 1945. Again, that was from LifeSite News, May 14th. DeSantis bans fluoride from Florida's water supply. Well, now we'll take a little break from some of the articles. One of our faithful listeners from Massachusetts has sent a whole bunch of good articles from the Boston Herald, New York Post, and I'll just read a few of them. I wish I could read all of them, but time doesn't permit. But they're very interesting ones. Here's one: New Hampshire enters agreement with ICE. Governor Kelly Ayotte takes swipe at Massachusetts. This from the Boston Herald, May 1st, by Lance Reynolds. Governor Kelly Ayotte, A-Y-O-T-T-E, is taking another swipe at the Bay State, as New Hampshire State Police will be allowed to question, arrest, and hold aliens based solely on immigration status, while Massachusetts limits its cooperation with ICE. And Ms. Ayotte said, quote, New Hampshire will not go the way of Massachusetts, where sanctuary policies have enabled violent crime and a $1 billion illegal immigrant crisis. And she said that in a statement on Wednesday. And again, the date of this was May 1st. She went on, criminals who are in our country illegally and pose a danger to our communities should be apprehended and removed. Ayotte's statement came after the New Hampshire State Police and several local law enforcement departments and sheriff's offices entered a memorandum of agreement with ICE that will allow aliens to be questioned, arrested, and held based solely on their immigration status. That's a few of the highlights. Again, that was from the Boston Herald, May 1st. Then we had a showdown in Worcester, Massachusetts. Everybody who's not from the state thinks it's pronounced Worcester, but those of us in the know that grew up there know it's Worcester. Showdown with ICE in Worcester. This was from May 9th, Boston Herald, also by Lance Reynolds. The Worcester Police Department arrested two protesters after responding to a call for a hostile crowd that had surrounded a federal ICE agent. Dozens of city residents gathered on Eureka Street in a residential neighborhood when the showdown with federal agents sparked anger yesterday morning. Worcester police were not initially on the scene, but responded at about 11:13 a.m. after receiving a report of a federal agent being surrounded by a large group of about 25 people. City police reportedly arrested a teenage girl and a city resident running as a candidate for school committee. We've heard some of that before. The politicians want to get their noses in so they can get some votes from these immigrants. And that's just, again, the highlights. Now, here's another one, this time May 11th, a little follow-up on that same story. Feds ID woman ICE detained in chaotic Worcester. Also by Lance Reynolds. Federal authorities say the woman detained amid the chaotic ICE operation in Worcester had been previously arrested on charges that included assault and battery on a pregnant victim. So, not exactly an innocent little girl, is it? Department of Homeland Security Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin has identified the target of Thursday's operation as, quote, violent criminal illegal alien, unquote, Ferreira de Oliveira. And Ms. McLaughlin said, quote, the previous administration's open border policies allowed this criminal to illegally enter our country in August of 2022, unquote. And McLaughlin said that in a scathing statement shared with the Herald, that's the Boston Herald, on Saturday. And it goes on with a great deal more, but time doesn't permit us to get too much more than the headlines. And we have a whole bunch more. As I say, I wish I had time for all of these. I'll read a few of the headlines. Full scale of asylum seeker violence. That from the New York Post, Saturday, May 3rd. And then we have, let's see here. Here's one. For a day in Suffolk Court. That was a judge. And I think we've heard of another case. This judge in, must be Boston because it's Suffolk County, Judge Shelley Joseph, the $200,000 a year Boston Municipal Court magistrate, will face a public hearing in June for her willful judicial misconduct for allowing an illegal immigrant to slip out a side door to avoid ICE agents. So she's in trouble. As she should be. Then we have Trump order targets sanctuary cities. That was, let me get a date on that. Shows a photograph of Trump and Tom Holman, or Holman, the border czar. That was by, now let's see, this is from, I think the Boston Herald. Let me see if I can locate the source there. Yes, Boston Herald. And the date was, do we have a date here? Don't see a date on that one. Maybe I do. Let me look down here in the fine print. April 29th, 2025. So within the last month. Well, there are many others, and maybe in future weeks I'll read a few more. This source up in Massachusetts has been great. He's been getting us all kinds of excellent things. And as I say, it just isn't time to read them all. There's so many good ones. Then we have, let's see now, from Slay News, S-L-A-Y, Slay News, May 14th. Renowned toxicologist, mRNA vaccines have destroyed immune systems of millions. This is by Frank Bergman. A world-renowned toxicologist, a world-renowned toxicologist has warned that millions of people who received COVID mRNA, quote, vaccines, unquote, have been impacted by a devastating injury, including himself. The chilling warning was issued by the Associate Professor of Pharmacology and Toxicology at the University of Western Australia, Dr. Phil Burcham. And this is Lou speaking. Many of you will remember, and it's in our book. And let me just say, if you want a copy of our book, COVID and Coming Chaos, just write to me, Lou Caverly. And again, the address is Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland. And the zip code is 21609. That's Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. An awful lot of the stuff that was in our book has proven to be prophetic, and more and more of it's coming true. So you may want to get a copy of that book. It's a nice summing up. It's an attractive book, too. Well put together. I think you'll enjoy it. Many of you have already got it, but if you haven't, don't delay. We still have some left, and it's free. If you can chip in a little bit to help with the cost of postage, we would be most grateful, but I'll send it out even if you can't do that. We wanted to get to people. So back to this Slay News article about this toxicologist in the University of Western Australia, Dr. Phil Burcham, B-U-R-C-H-A-M. It says, in a blistering critique published in the May 2025 edition of the journal Quadrant, Burcham raises urgent questions about the chemical design and safety testing of COVID mRNA, quote, vaccines, unquote. Drawing upon first-hand injury experience, insight of pharmaceutical literature, and decades of toxicological science, Burcham alleges that the deployment of mRNA LNP technologies ignored well-known formulation risks. The COVID mRNA injections also exposed patients to unvalidated toxic excipients and sidestepped rigorous preclinical evaluation, he argues. Burcham's article entitled An Injured Toxicologist Reflects on COVID mRNA Vaccines, Part 2, interrogates the molecular architecture of mRNA lipid nanoparticle platforms. That's the LNP referred to earlier. Lipid nanoparticle. He contends that serious and rapid onset toxicities experienced by thousands of Australians stem not solely from immune responses to spike protein, but from the synthetic materials used to construct LNP delivery systems. This top professor notes that his own debilitating trigeminal nerve injury was caused by a COVID mRNA vaccine. And some of you may have been victims of that. I once boarded with a landlady who had trigeminal neuralgia, and I suppose this is probably the same thing. There would be sharp, unexpected pains in the face. And I don't know if it's limited to the face. I don't know that much about it. But it was very, very debilitating. So this professor has been experiencing that. And jumping down a little bit, he explains the chemists tried to patch these liabilities using risky excipients rather than structural redesign. And jumping down once again, in his searing analysis, Bertram exposes deep flaws in the pharmacological vetting of LNP components used in COVID mRNA so-called vaccines. And I see our time is getting pretty short, but I'll read what I can of this. Neither Pfizer's nor Moderna's mRNA lipids were supported by robust toxicological data before their mass public rollout. Or to put it in layman's terms, I would think that means they just didn't have the evidence that they were safe and effective. They just rolled them out anyway. And in the article, despite their pivotal role in delivering mRNA payloads, these ionizable lipids lacked transparent preclinical safety disclosures. According to science journalist Ryan Cross's 2021 reporting, insiders acknowledge that most LNP candidates failed in animal models after promising in vitro performance. However, this data has never reached the public domain. Both vaccine makers declined interviews on their lipid selection processes, adding opacity to already opaque safety assumptions. Or to put it another way, they just sat on the results and won't tell anybody what they were. That simple. And finishing off, Bertram's case for acute chemical toxicity is rooted in disturbing patterns of rapid onset neurological symptoms. Well, our time has run out for today. I thank you for listening. Again, our address is Blue Caramelly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And check out our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. Thanks for listening, and tune in next week.